Come on, Holy Spirit, come on. Do I love and worship you? Whatever you say, I will do. You have my heart, so believe the truth. Elohim, breathe on me. Let your glory fill this room. Till everything's lost just like you. Every day discovering something brand new.
Good afternoon, everybody. You're tuned to Radio Veritas, and this is Spirit Wednesday with your host, Father Joseph Wilson, MSc, Missionaries of the Sacred Heart. And, as always, great to have you along. Now, I don't know about you, but I think the world is going absolutely mad very, very quickly. I'm going to put something to you. Do you think you could ever be arrested in our modern free world because of thinking, because of what you are thinking? Do you think police could come up to you and say, you know what, Joseph, you are under arrest because you're thinking things we don't like you to think? Do you think that is possible? Or do you think that I'm talking about a fairy story? Well, in reality, I am talking about a fairy story, but sadly, it is a true fairy story. It is, in fact, madness. Now, let me make it even clearer. Supposing you are a man, you are a Christian, you happen to be in England or UK, and you are pro-life. And across the street from you, some distance away, there is an abortion clinic, and it's in the background. But you are not protesting out loud. You're not screaming or shouting or blocking women from going in or coming out. You're not even accosting them in any way. You make yourself even more invisible. You are across the street and you're behind a tree with your back to the clinic, and you are praying. Do you think you could be arrested for that? Well, listen on. The next thing, some police men and women approach you. Well, 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 what's going on here? Now, you have a choice, and you can say, Officer, what do you mean? What's going on here? Well, what are you doing? And you could say to the officer, Officer, that is actually none of your business. I'm not breaking the law. But maybe you are a forthcoming Christian, and you say, Well, I'm thinking. And the officer asks you, What are you thinking? And you say, Well, I'm praying. And he asks, What are you praying about? And you say, Well, I'm praying for my dead son. And the officer says, You are under arrest. I'm not making this up, dear friends. This sounds like a fairy tale, but the sad thing is that it is a true fairy tale. And it is coming out of a country which has given us the Magna Carta. It has given us the great men and women who abolished slavery and worked around the world tirelessly for that. It has given us Florence Nightingale. It has given us Winston Churchill. It defeated Hitler in the Second World War. And the list goes on and on. And now we have these bobbies or policemen coming up to you and asking you what you think. I mean, literally, what are you thinking? And depending on your answer, you could be arrested and fined up to £9,000. Now, 900, 9,000 If you want to know what that is like in terms of Rand, a penny for your thoughts has never been so expensive. £9,000 multiplied by 21 equals £189,000. Can you believe it? Can you believe that in modern day UK, the upholder of democracy can charge somebody that amount of money because they don't like your thinking? Friends, we're going to be talking about this afternoon. I'm not making this up. It happened to a real Christian in pagan Britain, and we're going to see the consequences of this. But before we dive into it, in order to balance the show this afternoon, I came across some very amusing incidents in the life of a wonderful and great saint friend of mine, Saint Padre Pio. And we normally hear the serious side of Saint Padre, but somebody posted this video and I found it quite amusing. So we're going to start with some sanity before we eventually delve into the insanity of our modern world. We're going to have a listen now to the lighter side of Saint Padre Pio. You know, we always think that he is very, very serious, but he had I won't call it a wicked sense of humor, but he had a great sense of humor. And we're going to have a listen to some of the stories. They are taken from a book called Heavenly Facts and Words of Wisdom by Giuseppe Cassiopoli. Not sure if I'm pronouncing that, but it shows the lighter side of some of the anecdotes about Saint Padre Pio. Let's have a listen.
In the early days, on at least one occasion, Padre Pio good-humoredly co-opted Father Paolino, the superior of the convent, to share in the responsibility for making miracles. One day, a peasant knocked on the friary door. Padre Pio opened it, and the man asked for the friar who works miracles. But instead of letting the man know he was the one the man was looking for, Padre Pio led him to Father Paolino's room and remained outside eavesdropping. The peasant said to Father Paolino, "You know everything. My horse has been stolen. You have to tell me who stole it." Father Paolino replied, "The proverb says, he who knows your habits enters and steals." The peasant left, but returned 8 days later with a gift of cheese for Father Paolino. He said to him, "When I got back home, I thought about your words and singled out who knew my habits well. I went to his house and said, 'You stole my horse. The friar who works miracles told me so.' At these words, he gave me back my horse." Father Paolino would often joke with Padre Pio, "You are not the only one who works miracles."
So, dear friends, if you've lost your horse, then just check in with Saint Padre Pio. He'll have it within 8 days.
Now, while Padre Pio was known for his self-denying lifestyle, he did occasionally allow himself some little pleasure. However, he was also aware of how others perceived him. Listen to this. A friar once offered a sugared almond to Padre Pio. He accepted it and started to chew on it. He was then accompanied towards the sacristy to hear the men's confessions. When they reached the door, Padre Pio said, "Don't open the door yet. Let me finish this candy. Otherwise, they will say, 'What kind of saint is this if he eats candies?'" On a different occasion, a woman said to Padre Pio, "Father, my friend asked me to tell you that she has not been feeling well for the past 2 years. What should I say to her?" Padre Pio immediately replied, "Tell her that I have not been feeling well for the past 70 years. But his humor wasn't only limited to everyday encounters. Sometimes it would surface in response to more serious criticisms. In one instance, when a well-known actor sought his spiritual advice, Padre Pio's sharp wit was on full display. Carlo Campanini said to his doctor in Florence, "Tomorrow I'm going to see Padre Pio." The doctor replied, "He is a hysteric who got the wounds by thinking too much about Jesus on the cross." When Campanini met with Padre Pio in San Giovanni Rotondo, Padre Pio said to him, "When you see your doctor, tell him to think intensely about being a bull. Let us see if he starts growing horns." Once, speaking to a doctor, he made a rather harsh comment about why doctors never go on strike. "Do you know why you doctors never go on strike? Because if you went on strike, people would soon realize that without you, they get better, and they get better faster."
Well, that's a rather brave comment about doctors, isn't it? But then I suppose Padre Pio had his fair share of dealing with doctors, and he used to say about them that they like to, well, we'd put it politely, they like to do operations. He put it a little bit more direct. He called it they like to cut. And there's a story told, of course, how he had to fight off the doctor who was examining him from examining his hands. In fact, he went under an operation without any anesthetic because he didn't want the doctors to keep poking at his hands. So, marvelous man.
When the construction of the new, much larger convent church was completed, everyone expected Padre Pio to be impressed. But true to his nature, Padre Pio did not hide his displeasure. The author shared, "In 1959, Padre Pio was shown the newly built church of Santa Maria delle Grazie just before its inauguration on July 1st. The church was several times larger than the original church. But to everybody's surprise, Padre Pio was not impressed at all. He called it a mousetrap. His exact words were, 'What have you made? A mousetrap? It should have been bigger, much bigger.' On another occasion, he called it a matchbox."
Well, I'll hand it to Padre Pio. He certainly thinks outside of the box, and he thinks big, because he was a big-hearted man.
In conclusion, these stories show us a side of Padre Pio that isn't always highlighted: his humor and wit, alongside his deep spirituality.
I love when saints are humorous, and I think the best of them are very, very humorous. And of course, I believe that also reflects the humor and good sense of humor of our loving Father.
And I'm just too close to heaven to turn back now. His grace will be sufficient. I'm gonna make it somehow. I love him too. To break my heart.
That is, I love him too much to fail him now. That is sung by the Heritage Singers, too.
You are tuned to Spirit Wednesday on Radio Veritas with your host, Father Joseph Wilson, MSc. The station that gives you the good news for a change.
The following story, dear friends, is very disturbing. It's taken from CBN News. A UK man arrested for silently praying. This comes from August the 22nd, 2023. I only picked it up recently. A UK man criminally charged after praying outside an abortion clinic is speaking up about his case, sharing the details of what unfolded with CBN, that is a Christian outlet. The man's name is Adam Smith Connor, and he said he was outside the clinic last November for just 2 or 3 minutes before community police support officers approached him and started asking questions. They asked me, this is a quotation, what I was doing, and I said I was praying for my deceased son. The female officer asked me, what is the nature of your prayer? Now, what a question from a police officer. Smith Connor was somewhat taken aback by that question, and I said I was praying for my deceased son. Okay, rather than me going over the story, let's hear it from the horse's mouth itself. This is taken from CBN News.
Adam, last November, you were in front of an abortion clinic and you were silently praying when you were approached by police officers. Can you take us through what happened?
Yeah, I arrived and I was there for barely 2 or 3 minutes, and there were these community police support officers. So not actually police officers, but officers employed by the council to manage antisocial behaviour in and around Bournemouth.
Bournemouth is a city in southwest England, and it has got about a population of 200,000 people.
And they approached me after I was there for barely minutes. First of all, they asked me what I was doing, and I said I was praying. Then the female officer asked me, what is the nature of your prayer? I was a bit taken back by that, and I said I was praying for my deceased son, at which point they informed me I was breaching the PSPO order.
He mentions there PSPO, and that stands for Public Spaces Protection Order, a guideline for councils.
And instructed me to leave the area.
So in that moment, during that interaction, did they fine you? Was there a penalty for it, you know, when they were asking you to leave?
So they informed me that they considered that my praying for my deceased son was a breach of the PSPO, that it was an act of disapproval of abortion, although I wasn't manifesting that prayer in any way. And if I hadn't told them, they would have had no way of knowing what I was praying about.
Because it was silent. This was a silent prayer in your mind, right? You were praying.
It was a silent prayer in my mind. I should say I've been praying outside of abortion clinics since 2019 as part of 40 Days for Life. We do keep the authorities informed about our activities. And because there was a buffer zone there, I'd said that, you know, I will be praying, but I will not manifest my prayer in any way. I will not interfere with anyone in any way. I have no signs. I had my back to the clinic. There was a tree between me and the clinic. Came said my mere presence there was breaching the PSPO. Once they declared that I was breaching it with no evidence, I wasn't doing anything to upset anyone. I hadn't been there for barely 2 minutes when they came up to me. They just declared that I was breaching it, and that if I failed to move on their instruction, that therefore I would be liable to a fine.
But Lois, I want to come to you on this because I think there may be people who are watching or listening and they're thinking, what is this PSPO? What are these buffer zones? Can you explain to us why these officers were able to come over under the law and say, hey, you can't be here. You shouldn't be doing that.
Absolutely. Well, listening to Adam's story there, you might think that you're listening to an extract from an Orwellian novel like 1984, but no, this is real. It's in 2023, and police did come over to check Adam's thinking and even ended up prosecuting him for such. The reason they were able to do this is because in five local UK areas, there has been implemented these, we call them PSPOs, and they have led to a buffer zone or a censorship zone around about the clinic. Quite commonly, it covers several streets ranging about 150 meters in circumference around the clinic. And in these zones, they ban what they say is the expression of approval or disapproval of abortion. They list, this was brought in for ostensibly good reasons. The people who campaigned for it said that this was to end harassment against women. And if that's what these measures, these buffer zones did, then myself, Adam, ADF UK, we would all be for these things because we all stand against harassment of women. However, this is not in reality what the buffer zones are doing. They're going much, much further to criminalize prayer, handing out leaflets about services available to women who are vulnerable and might want to learn about other options available to them other than abortion. And they criminalize, in Adam's case in Bournemouth, the PSPO buffer zone criminalizes even crossing oneself and reading scripture, various different expressions, basically, of the Christian faith. If Adam had been standing there shouting about another social issue, for example, say climate change, that would have been perfectly legal under the law. He could express thought, opinion, agreement, disagreement with any other social cause. But because he was silently and peacefully thinking about abortion specifically, that empowered the local officers to be able to approach him, fine him, and ultimately now take him to court.
Well, now you just see the absolute hypocrisy of these woke governments and their legislation. So ostensibly they're saying, well, we're putting this measure into place in order to protect women. I wonder how a silent prayer is an attack against a woman. But leave that aside. Just think about this. Anything else could be protested in the same area, same vicinity, women present, for example, as supporting terrorism, supporting Hamas, having these kind of demonstrations. They can be loud, they can be screaming, they can be hateful. And the government will say, no, these are allowed. But somehow praying in your heart is a subversive activity.
These officers, they carry legal weight, although they're not full police officers, right, Lois? Just help us understand that, too, just as we talk about this.
Yeah, no, it's a good question because this is an unusual situation for us, too. Normally, we don't have, normally our local councils take care of things like parking tickets. Or kind of much, you know, kind of unthinking, kind of little petty things like that. So it's very strange to us that the council have implemented this PSPO themselves, have written it up, are themselves policing it, and now themselves are prosecuting it. So they've made themselves the judge, jury, and executor of this PSPO situation, which to us is very strange. We don't think that it's a good system, a just system, and obviously. The principle behind the buffer zone itself to censor pro-life thoughts, to censor any thoughts about abortion, is deeply concerning.
As far as I understand it, this has also been passed nationally as well. This is something that will be coming to all of the UK, correct?
That's correct. So this started off as being five local councils at the time of the incident in which Adam was involved. There was five local councils who had brought in these censorial measures. The government saw this and voted in March to introduce this across the country. So we can expect to see a lot more legal confusion, a lot more potential cases where people have been innocently and, you know, either praying or if they were to hand out a leaflet or offer support to a woman in need, and that would now be considered legal. What we want to know and what we're hoping to hear from the government soon is as they have not yet implemented this bill, They are, in fact, issuing guidance. This is a very common practice. When you pass a law in the UK, the government will then issue guidance to prosecutors and police as to how the best way is to enforce this law, to kind of explain what it means and things like that. So we're waiting for that to be issued. We hope that the government will see sense and put in some protections for freedom of thought in there. But for now, we're waiting to see what unfolds.
Have been listening there to Nothing Soothes the Soul Like Jesus from the Heritage Singers.
You are tuned to Spirit Wednesday on Radio Veritas with your host, Father Joseph Wilson, MSc, the station that gives you the good news for a change.
Okay, so let's go right back to the strange incident of the arrest of Adam Smith Connor in Bournemouth in England, because he was praying privately, for which he got arrested.
You, Adam, on this, because you have this experience where these officers come up to you, they're asking what you're praying for, which is very invasive and strange. And this is on video, so people can see the video, it's out there. What was going through your heart and your mind after you left that situation? You know, as you were walking away, as you were leaving after that interaction?
I can't quite believe that our country is plunged to such depths that we now have thought crime in this nation. I'm an ex-serviceman. I love my country. I served the country for 20 years. I'm an Afghanistan veteran. And I was prepared to put my life on the line for this nation because I believe in our values. I believe in the value of freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom to gather. These are a really precious freedom that many nations simply do not have those freedoms. And we need to be a beacon of freedom at the top of the hill, because without the West, without the USA and Britain and our Christian values, freedom will be crushed. And to say that somebody simply thinking the wrong thing in the wrong place at the wrong time is a criminal offence is frankly, it's an offence against our nation. It's an offence against 1,000 years of history. Now, we're a nation under God. We recently crowned the king, King Charles. He gave pledges to uphold God's law. And yet Bournemouth Council think that they have the right to trample all over that law. They think they have the right to trample over the memory of friends of mine who passed away defending this nation's freedoms. It's an insult, frankly, to our nation. And for that reason, I refuse to pay the fine, and I now find myself being prosecuted.
Well done, Adam. Now, you've just heard a man who's standing on principle. He loves this country. He was prepared to die for it. He put his life on the line. Now he's being prosecuted for a thought crime, a crime that's in your head, that an officer has to ask you, what are you thinking? We want to know. And then he tells them, well, I'm actually praying. Oh, you're in a vicinity that is protected. You are a threat. You're violating the local council, and so we're fining you. What does he do? He says, I'm not paying the fine. There is a man of conscience.
Well, let's talk about that part, because so obviously you get the fine over this. As far as I understand from what I've read and seen in this case, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it should have sort of ended there. Why did they decide, you know, everyone was sort of shocked that you ended up in court recently and that you were charged over this. Talk a little bit about that. How did that come about? And Lois, feel free to jump in as well, you know, as he's talking about this, because that was the part of the story that I think took people back a little bit.
Yeah, it very much took us by surprise. Sure. So I didn't hear anything from the counsel. I was on the day the officers said to me, you might receive a fine for this. And sure enough, I did receive a fine back in December. And they reissued the fine because of some clerical issue in January, and then I heard nothing. And then in July, I think it was, ADF said, well, the time has lapsed now. They can't prosecute you now because they have to do it within 6 months of the offence. And ADF announced that Bournemouth Council had dropped the case, that there was no case to answer. And as soon as ADF said that, literally the day that they said that, Bournemouth Council posted out a court summons. And that seemed to trigger within the council the court summons. And it turns out the court summons had actually been issued back in May, 2 months earlier, and they hadn't sent it out. So it's a very bizarre situation, frankly, that's unfolding. We've no idea why they sat on it for 2 months. Last week it was, I had to go to court and plead not guilty.
This is a very unusual set of circumstances. You can imagine the shock that we had when that came through. So to give that kind of some behind the scenes context, but on May 12th, without telling anybody, the council issued a court summons. Now, what is standard normal practice for a council is that they would contact the person who is being summoned on that day. I think the guidance says that they are to be informed as soon as possible. And typically we expect that to mean within about 24 hours. And there's no set limit on what as soon as possible means, but we've certainly never seen it reach the level of 2 months before.
Was the court summons and the charge related because he wouldn't pay the fine? Adam, you wouldn't pay the fine. So is that the root of the charge, or was it the actual act that day, or both?
The fine letter, unbelievably, within the fine letter says that the breach was because I was praying for my deceased son. So when I didn't pay that, that's the reason for the summons, because I haven't paid that fine.
So let's say they find you guilty of not paying this fine. Do they fine you more? Is there some other, what ends up happening next in that case?
What's at stake is it would be a further penalty, and it would be a considerable financial cost. But I think what Adam has said so eloquently before is that what's at stake is not only a monetary fine, but is freedom. It's the freedom to be able to express thought in this country that, I mean, I know in America, you kind of define yourselves as land of the free, which is great. But in the UK, we also have all these traditions. We have the home of the Magna Carta, as Adam mentioned in one of his recent quotes. You know, the whole of people who fought against slavery, carried this tradition. And if it was to be the case that a silent, prayerful thought was to break UK laws, the repercussions for our country would be huge.
Yeah, and I think for the world, I mean, we're watching right now situations in Finland, Malta, Mexico, the UK, and these are all very different cases, but they're all very troubling cases when it comes to religious liberty and religious freedom. And there's a pattern happening. We even had a pastor, or not a pastor, but a street preacher who was arrested outside of a Pride event in Pennsylvania, and they dropped the charges after recently because he shouldn't have been arrested. So, you know, this is something that is happening more and more, and I think the repercussions are huge here. Adam, how, you know, when you were at court, speaking out to the media, you were under...
But yeah, I was very emotional afterwards.
How has this affected your family and your life? Because it has become...
I'm emotional because... Obviously, I lost a child to abortion, and I've lost a child to miscarriage. I'm emotional because the propaganda of the abortion industry has so captured our culture. In a way, I think it probably hasn't been publicized enough. What I mean by that is Christians know about this. You know about it. Lois knows about it. My Christian friends, the church where I go, know about this issue. But we need the man on the street to know about this. We need the average person who perhaps doesn't watch Christian TV. This has such profound repercussions for our nation. I think the abortion industry are quite happy for this to be kept quiet and sort of tuck it away and say this is a fringe issue that's only affecting small areas of our nation. Once we crack through this glass ceiling and say that thought crimes can actually occur, at the moment it's only outside of abortion clinics, but once you crack that box open, there's nothing to stop it happening on the high street, or you simply expand the size of the buffer zones. And I mean, at the moment, the national buffer zone is 150 meters, but that's 150 meters in each direction. So that's
490. That's 490 feet. You know, you know, so when we talk in terms of feet, that is a massive area that I know for a fact there have to be businesses and homes that are in those areas. But I would imagine around some of these clinics where people are probably silently praying in their businesses and homes, which is interesting.
Yeah, you could be in a coffee shop that happens to be inside that buffer zone discussing with your friend the abortion issue, and you are technically speaking breaking the law. If someone took offense at it, you could find yourself in my situation. And somebody's worked out that it's about 26 kilometers squared of British land where you could be prosecuted for a thought crime. It's just outrageous. It's un-British, frankly.
The fact is, this affects everybody, because right now we're talking about this issue, but it could be something else tomorrow. And I think it's really easy to forget that fact when we're talking about these cases.
Yes, they're absolutely right. This is establishing a kind of a creeping precedent. It starts off with limiting speech or action around abortion clinics. And then when they get away with that, it will start creeping into other areas where protest is not allowed or free speech. And you'd think, well, that's not a big deal. Well, you've only got to go back to our own situation, where you remember during COVID, you had to be very careful what you said about that, because it did not align with the prevailing narrative. And the prevailing narrative was not just here in South Africa. See, our leaders in South Africa were actually dictated to by powers and powerful people and powerful agenda outside of our borders. And thankfully, COVID ended before they actually had to implement those draconian measures. But I agree with them. This is wider than just a guy refusing to pay a fine. There is liberty and freedom at stake.
Lord, I'm
that once again is Heritage Singers from an album called I Love Him Too Much to Fail Him. I found them very refreshing. It's not the usual run-of-the-mill generic religious music, which you listen to and you forget it as quickly as the sound goes out the other ear. Well done. Those are the Heritage Singers.
You are tuned to Spirit Wednesday on Radio Veritas with your host, Father Joseph Wilson, MSc, the station that gives you the good news for a change.
Now, dear friends, I'm going over to a man that I've only discovered quite recently. His name is Meyer Tusi. He was born on the 11th of June, 1988, from Iran. He is an immigrant. His father was an immigrant, but now he is a complete British citizen. And he is a classic liberal conservative political commentator. And the reason I like him is because he's fearless, he speaks the truth, and he's not in anybody's camp. And therefore, I was quite interested to hear his take on this case of Adam being hauled up before the justice system. And the other reason I love this man is because he actually speaks out in defense of Christianity in a very hostile, secular environment. So let's have a listen to him.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the channel. I'm Meyer Tusi, and this is your latest update from the absolute chaotic situation in the United Kingdom. Religious rights, specifically against Christianity, continue to be undermined. The establishment don't seem to care, and the justice system clearly has a number of different tiers when it comes to religious groups and non-religious groups that can do whatever they want, apparently. This is the war on UK Christians. As you guys have seen over the last few months, over the last couple of years, we've talked a lot about a number of individuals and Christians. A Christian preacher has been arrested in central London. A number of people have been arrested and charged for simply silently praying in their head near abortion centres. Not next to it, not outside, away from it. Obviously, these buffer zone nonsense were created in order, that they said, in order to stop intimidation. Now, firstly, it's not really in the British culture to do that anyway. Objectively speaking, I think everybody's against people just targeting physically other people. But that's not what is happening in the UK. We have people who care, who are going around near abortion centres, not even outside the door, silently praying because that these are their values, because they believe that obviously you are killing babies. The police are going around arresting them. There have been a number of cases, and the latest one in Poole now confirms, because the justice system in the United Kingdom is based on precedent. So we now have a new verdict that criminalizes Christian silent praying. So while we have other people doing whatever they want to do loudly across the country, but Christians are being targeted. Let's quickly go to the video statement we have from in Poole when the verdict happened, and then we are going to be joined by a very special guest.
Hello, we've just received the verdict from the judge in the case of Adam Smith Connor. She has found Adam guilty for his silent prayers. This is a shocking verdict. Adam, what would you like to say on receiving this verdict?
Well, I just want to thank everyone for the support over the last 2 years, since I was first accused of this thought crime on the 24th of November, 2022. Psalm 22, verse 10 says, "When my father and mother forsake me, then the Lord will take care of me." I served our great nation for 20 years as an army reservist. I continue to serve my local community as a physiotherapist and a church volunteer. I never imagined that the nation I love and has been so good to me in the past could turn on me for doing nothing more than offer up a prayer for my deceased son. I felt like my government had forsaken me, but the Lord has taken care of me, surrounded me with prayer, and provided me with an excellent legal team with ADF UK. I want to thank everyone who's been praying for justice in this court case. I've received messages of support from across Britain, America, Italy, and even in Bethlehem, the birthplace of Christ. I'm extremely saddened that the judge has found me guilty. This marks a dark and dangerous day for our nation, setting a legal precedence that thought crimes can occur in England.
Now, I wonder if you got that, because it's quite important. Adam Smith Connor is deeply saddened and worried that a judge, a British judge, has found him, quote, guilty of prayer, in effect. Now, that should tell you everything. A society that is rushing headlong into the abyss is terrified of prayer, even though it doesn't believe in it, because it is a secular culture. They seem to be okay with people running mayhem and rampant all over the country, screaming racial slurs and genocidal slogans. That seems to be all right. But a man praying silently in his own heart, that is a subversive activity for which you are, quote, guilty.
When George Orwell wrote 1984 in the year 1948, he meant it as a warning, not as a guidebook. It seems Orwell's predictive powers were off by 40 years, but apart from that, the notion that thought crime could become established in the British legal system was sadly accurate.
So now we go back to May here, 2C on 2C TV, and he's going to interview Lewis McClutchney, whom we've heard earlier, and her reaction.
I'm good, thank you. Well, I'm shocked, to be honest. I'm still recovering. I was at the court, as you saw, with Adam this week, and it did feel like an era-defining ruling for Great Britain. Obviously, it's been devastating for Adam. He is now in a situation where he has to pay £9,000 for his silent thought. But even more so, perhaps, it's a devastating ruling for those who care about freedom in the United Kingdom. And whether you're a Christian, whether you believe in the pro-life views, or whether you're pro-abortion, we can think we can all look at this and say, my goodness, haven't we come a long way if we are finding people guilty on the basis of their thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of the liberal media in Bournemouth and all those areas, and nationally speaking as well. The liberal side have been going around saying that Adam and a lot of you guys have actually been going around harassing people and targeting people. So, objectively speaking, I mean, your opinion aside, the truth that you see exactly what happened. So, what was he actually doing? Was he actually doing anything illegal in terms of targeting people?
Of course not. And the counsel who prosecuted him confirmed this. The police who witnessed him confirmed this. Adam was silently praying in his head for about 3 minutes before he was interrogated as to the nature of his prayers. Now, that was never in dispute at the trial. It was not in dispute in the judge's ruling. It's very clear that this was about his silent prayer. The judge in the ruling also emphasized that Adam had bowed his head slightly as he was praying, and she leant heavily on that fact to say, well, then people would have known, perhaps, if they'd seen you, that you would have been praying, and therefore you've been breaking the buffer zone.
I don't know how to put this. This has come from a country, UK, in which Christianity has been systematically in decline since the 1930s. And here is a man, for 3 minutes, bowing his head in a so-called buffer zone, with his back to the clinic, head bowed, and this somehow annoys a judge, that she recognizes prayer. My goodness, this is the most subversive act you can do in the United Kingdom. Not burning down police cars, not burning down flags, not chanting slogans at Parliament, but actually bowing your head in prayer. Now, what the hell is going on here? What in God's name is going on here? If a government and a local council is intimidated by this, then this shows us that the pro-abortion lobby is very, very insecure. But here's the thing you mightn't know, that the pro-aborts are the very people who say, do not criminalize people. Do not criminalize women for their abortions. And of course, it rarely, if ever, happens. Now, these are the people, the very same people, who demand the criminalization of Christians because they bow their head, and they get a £9,000 fine for a 3-minute prayer. Work out how many pounds or how many rands that is per second. And before I go back to the clip, it just reminds me of what happened. You know, in the Acts of the Apostles, when the apostles were preaching Christ, who became very, very, very insecure? Was it not the high priests? And they started legislating. You may not use this man's name, that is Jesus' name. You may not use it. And here we have a variation on the same theme.
It was quite ludicrous, really, to hear such an analysis and to say that because somebody might have known that he was praying, he's therefore guilty of expressing approval or disapproval of abortion, which is what is technically banned in that zone. And it also prevented us from getting to the heart of the question, can a silent prayer, imperceptible, unseen, really be a crime? We still don't have clarity after that ruling.
The other thing that the liberal media have been saying is that he was just outside the door of the clinic and basically kind of essentially harassing the people. Was he literally just outside the door or was he away from it?
No, he was standing in a public green. It was actually across the street and to the side of the clinic. So, and he actually stood by a tree because he wanted to, and he stood with his back to the clinic, so he wanted to be sure not to be seen as trying to engage with anyone. He wanted kind of to be standing peacefully on his own without interruption and without being seen to be approaching or anyone like that. So he took every precaution possible to stay out of trouble. But unfortunately, it was the basis of his thoughts that led to his prosecution.
That is, it's crazy because obviously I'm a free speech absolutist and rights as well and freedoms. This one is completely ridiculous because it wasn't even like shouting at people. It was just a silent prayer. But my position is, and I mean, it's always good to be a better person rather than like being annoying. But I myself still believe that, for example, if there's a protest, I don't know, some sort of Islamist protest, left-wing protest, myself or other people should have the right to counter protest. And the other side and the police would say, no, you are there, your presence there is annoying them and you're provoking them. And then they end up arresting you as a counter protester. You should have the right to provoke, not to be annoying as a human, but you have a right to also be seen and to be heard. And there'll be a number of people who've been arrested for holding a sign saying Hamas are terrorists. It's a similar analogy compared to what's happened here. Obviously, it's not exactly the same, but then they were just there holding a sign and they got arrested. And there were people advocating saying, yeah, it makes sense. They got a warning from the police and their presence was offending other people. This one is not even holding a sign, but you can technically compare it. Where do you think this is going in the UK?
Yeah, and it was interesting you raise those other examples because if Adam had been dressed in kind of climate change garb in an orange t-shirt and had been yelling about the state of the planet, that would have been perfectly legal. And yes, if he'd been commenting on wars taking place in the Middle East and affirming his support for one side, that would have been his right to do so as well. That wouldn't have got him into trouble. But it was because he was thinking, praying about abortion, a view that the state disapproves of. That's why he got into trouble. So it is really important to think about those examples and think, if we have a country where only some people have free speech, only some people now have freedom of thought, this is a warning sign. This is a time where we have to look at this ruling and say, okay, we've gone too far. We need to remember our fundamental freedoms that we uphold in Britain. And in fact, that Adam served in the army to protect and defend abroad as well.
Lewis here makes a very vital point. She's not alone talking about freedom of speech for certain people. In other words, you can cry all you like outside of any buffer zone that abortion should be free. So you have freedom of speech, but she also mentions freedom of thought. Now, what's going on here is that only certain people have both freedom of speech and freedom of thought. One is defended by the law and the other is criminalized by the law. So they're pointing out that there is actually no real freedom. especially when it comes to discussing abortion.
In Birmingham, in Leicester, a number of places, when some schools were doing LGBT education thing, when Christians complained, they told them to shut up. But when the Islamic families in Birmingham were complaining and protesting outside schools very viciously and very violently, aggressively, then they somehow listened to them, saying, yes, their parents' rights, that you know they don't want their kids to get LGBT education. Isn't that a problem?
I think Christians have indeed been at the blunt end of free speech laws for some time, or censorship laws, rather, from some time. Often when we think of kind of blasphemy laws, we think of countries like Pakistan or Nigeria, where Christians are on death row because they WhatsApped a message about Jesus Christ or something that the dominant religion found offensive. But as we look to Europe, we actually see similar laws coming in, which also prosecute Christians for expressing their beliefs because they're against the dominant beliefs here. Now, if that's, you know, a hate speech law in Finland, where there's a Christian politician being prosecuted right now for tweeting a Bible verse, or hate speech laws coming in Scotland and Ireland, or laws in Great Britain, for example, the buffer zone legislation under which Adam was prosecuted under locally is going to be rolled out across the nation on the 31st of October. We also have potential laws coming in, conversion therapy ban laws, which would potentially make it very difficult for Christians to be allowed to pray with somebody, a young person confused about their gender. And we saw throughout, for another example, the pandemic, where churches were closed for a lot longer than other establishments like liquor stores or bicycle shops. Because religious freedom rights have been so undermined and neglected by our governments, by this country, and I'm not talking about just this government specifically, I mean decades worth of governments. These rights have been so neglected and undermined that we forget they exist at all. We're not considering these fundamental rights to think freely, to express your beliefs in public and in private, to worship, which is in enshrined in the ICCPR, in international law. The UK government has to affirm these, but unfortunately we're not doing so.
Once again, Christians are being overlooked when they make a protest. They're not taken seriously, they're pushed down, and their right to free speech is not accepted. But let a Muslim or Muslim families protest the very same issue, and they will be saying, oh no, we've got to listen to these people. They are, after all, they have family rights. And so what's happening, I believe, in the West, that is Great Britain, Western Europe and the United States, is that there is a systematic squashing of Christian protest, Christian thinking, Christians affirming what they believe. That is just becoming increasingly unacceptable to the ruling parties throughout the world. And, dear friends, don't forget that Jesus told us that this would happen. He told us very, very clearly that they will haul you before kings and governors and before chief priests. They will haul you, and they will even think that they're doing something completely legitimate. It's already happening.
One thing is, in Christian cultural countries like the UK, for example, or the US, if you come for the Christian culture, then you will also go for the individual liberties of people. So that means that those who are not necessarily Christian, those who are secular, it's also their job to also defend this, to also fight for this, because whether you are pro-life or pro-choice at this point, this is really the debate about that, because you should also, as a pro-choice person, you should also fight for Adam's right and your rights, because once they come for the Christian values, cultural values, because the West is based on that, they're going to come for your free speech. They're going to come for your individual rights. What's your message to those who, when they're listening to you, they say, oh, well, Lewis or Adam, they're talking the Christian stuff. I don't really care. They seem to be like more secular. Then they don't realize they could be next. What do you say about that?
Right. Well, I mean, it's all about precedent, isn't it? And now that we have allowed the government, the state authority, the right to say in this area, this large area of public streets, you're not allowed to think this opinion, you're not allowed to have a peaceful, consensual conversation about this one view. Do you really think they're just going to stop there now that they have the authority to do so? I think we could see buffer zones coming around a number of establishments, town halls, for example, where people might, you know, the public might take offense to the views of gender-critical feminists, perhaps, or to people of other faiths in different areas of the town. You know, there's no reason now why we can't have censorship of other views, because the pro-life view, just because it was unpopular to start with, doesn't mean that it's less valid to hold in public life. I mean, for generations, this was the mainstream norm to have concerns about abortion, concerns about unborn children, and if this was really the most helpful thing for women, if we cannot do more in society to support pregnant women and their babies. And so it's a very helpful contribution to public society to have this point of view, how we can be doing better to serve women. And to take that away is actually a huge disservice. There's 15%. According to the BBC, of women who have abortions today in Britain, do so under pressure, whether that's pressure from a partner or from family members, from economic circumstances, or many other issues. If we have a situation where that's occurring, is it not absolutely right to have volunteers who want to offer options of support, financial support, if that's what women would like to consider, to offer these choices to women who are in a crisis pregnancy so that abortion is not their only option? I think that's a very pro-choice move, if you ask me. And removing those volunteers from abortion facilities, from the area of need of many of these women, is removing choices. Buffer zones aren't pro-choice. They're no choice.
Great point again from Lewis. In other words, these people who scream about pro-choice actually don't want pro-choice. In other words, they want abortion, full stop. Now, she's arguing that there are people, given that 15% of women in UK are actually forced into, pressurized to have an abortion, either from their partners or whoever, then shouldn't these women also be offered a different kind of a choice? You have the choice to abort according to law. I'm not saying do it. I'm saying they have the choice. But what about offering them also another choice? We will help you. We will support you. We will financially support you. We will help you deliver the baby. We will help support the child. Maybe if you want to adopt it. That is giving a woman freedom of choice for her to decide what she would like to do. But it seems that this secular, atheistic, agnostic, anti-Christian culture sees pro-choice as one choice. And by one choice, I mean the only choice. If it is not what the radical left want, then you ain't pro-choice. J.D. Vance, who is a Catholic and the running mate of Donald Trump in the upcoming election, he is pro-life. And he made a very, very good point. He said to the radical left that if you believe in choice, you must also support that choice. For example, if women want to hold on to their child, they should be supported economically to do so. And that is real choice.
You're obviously, you're part of ADF International. Tell us what it is and what you guys do.
Sure. Well, we are a legal organization that fights for the right of everybody to live and speak the truth. So we were standing alongside Adam on his trial as he fought for his right to think about the pro-life message. We've stood by others, Isabel von Spruce, who you mentioned in your intro, others across Europe and across the world, who have been censored for their beliefs, whether that's through tweeting a Bible verse in Finland or WhatsApping a message in Pakistan. We're able to come alongside those victims with legal support. We have a strong presence in the UK where we're working to protect free speech, freedom of religion, and other fundamental rights here. So do check us out, adf.uk in the UK, adfinternational.org for those around the world. And we'd love to come alongside and see how we can support others in your country too.
One of the other things that we have to talk about is Christian preachers. So in Leicester Square in London, you've got five pillars and a couple of other groups, Islamic groups, who are always there every day giving out free Quran, and they play the loud Islamic music thing, whatever, they do prayers. And then usually across the road, you know, every now and then there's a Christian prayer as well, doing Christian preaching. And the police usually threaten, and sometimes they arrest the Christian preachers. It makes no sense. And the Christian preacher is not really going to harass the Islamic side. They're just standing on the other side of the road. But they get complained about, so the police take them away. And that is another problem.
Okay, so that was Maya Tusi from Tusi TV. And hope you found him interesting. I certainly do. I think he's very, very balanced. He's not anti-Islam. He's not anti-anybody. He's pro-freedom, pro-liberty. And I think that that is the essence of the gospel. After all, did Jesus not say, if the Son of Man sets you free, you will be free indeed? And of course, not everybody agrees with our good Lord, because they don't want to be free. They want to be in slavery to certain bondages, which they call freedom. They believe freedom to do what you like is actually freedom. Freedom to oppress and silence other people is freedom. Well, it's their concept of freedom, but it is not a Christian concept of freedom. The primary tenet of Christian freedom is to be free from sin, free from all personal unfreedoms, things that oppress us within and cause us then to be an oppressive agent in the lives of other people. All right, so I hope you enjoyed today's program. It was intended to spark thinking and to get you to think maybe outside of the box. And what I find very, very fascinating and very hopeful is that there are many people, as Jesus said, in this city who are my friends. They may not be wearing a church cap, but they see what is going on and they are rising up against it. And my final and parting thought would be, I hope the Conference of Catholic Bishops of England, Scotland and Wales will rise up and say, people, this is nonsense. What you're doing, these kind of laws you're passing, they really are ridiculous. Now, of course, these people will say, yeah, but we are trying to defend people and defend them from harassment. Okay, well, you just think of Adam Smith Connor. He wasn't harassing anybody. He was silently praying behind a tree with his back to the abortion clinic, and he got arrested. Now, where is freedom? Where is freedom?
Faith of our fathers living still, in spite of dungeon, fire and sword. Oh, how our hearts beat high with joy, whenever we hear that glorious word. Faith of our fathers, holy faith, we will be true to thee till death.
Our fathers chained in prisons dark, were still in heart and conscience free.
How sweet would be their children's fate if they, like them, could die for thee.
Faith of our fathers, holy faith, we will be true to thee till death.
Where is freedom? Where is freedom? I suppose we could listen to Mel Gibson as he plays William Wallace in the movie Braveheart.
I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men, and free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
Fight against that? No! We will run!
And we will live. Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
You may take our lives, but you will never take our freedom. And even Vatican II had something to say about this freedom. I'm quoting from Gaudium et Spes, chapter 4, or number 4. It says, quote, "Never has the human race enjoyed such an abundance of wealth, resources, and economic power, and yet a huge proportion of the world's citizens are still tormented by hunger and poverty, while countless numbers suffer from total illiteracy. Never before has man had such a keen understanding of freedom. Yet, at the same time, new forms of social and psychological slavery make their appearance. Since all these things are so, the modern world shows itself at once powerful and weak, capable of the noblest deeds or the foulest. Before it lies the path to freedom or to slavery, to progress or retreat, to brotherhood or to hatred. Only in freedom can man direct himself towards goodness. Our contemporaries make much of this freedom and pursue it eagerly, and rightly to be sure. Often, however, they foster it perversely as a license for doing whatever pleases them, even if it is evil. For its part, authentic freedom is an exceptional sign of the divine image within man. Since man's freedom has been damaged by sin, only by the aid of God's grace can he bring such a relationship with God into full flower. Before the judgment seat of God, each man must render an account of his own life, whether he has done good or evil." Let me end today's program with a prayer for freedom, freedom from the sin that enslaves us personally. Let us pray in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Lord, forgive me for giving place in my heart to resentment, to lust, to anger, to alcohol. Forgive me for giving place in my life to resignation and self-reproach and shame, to fear and doubt and control. I renounce these things now. Come, Jesus Christ, and take your rightful place in my heart and in my life here. Come and set me free here, in these very places. I plead your blood over my sins, and I ask you to break every hold that I've given my enemy here, in the name of our dear, precious Savior, Jesus Christ. Thank you, dear friends, for joining me, and I bless you now. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord cause his face to shine on you and be gracious unto you. May he uncover his face to you. May he grant you his peace. And I bless you in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. And keep your freedom in Christ. God bless you.